You're listening to KVMR FM Nevada City, KCPC Camino, and it's time for The Sages Among Us. What makes a community great? Most importantly, it's the people who live and work there and who are engaged in community life. The Sages Among Us focuses on these people, what they do and why they do it, and celebrates the leadership, time, and energy they bring to making a positive difference for all of us.
Hello and welcome to The Sages Among Us. My name is Maddie Davis and I'm a host on The Sages Among Us here with my esteemed guest today, Teresa Baker. Teresa, welcome to the show and thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So glad you're here. Well, I'm going to share just a little bit about your background with the audience before we jump in, but sure. If there's anything you'd like to add, please go for it. Would love to hear all about you. So
absolutely.
Teresa, yes. Oh, lovely. Teresa is the founder of the In Solidarity Project and a co-founder of the Outdoorist Oath and is a lifelong lover of the outdoors who dedicates herself to engaging underrepresented communities in outdoor spaces to promote environmental protection. Through her work with outdoor agencies, organizations, and speaking engagements nationwide, she strives to foster diversity and inclusivity, believing in building a longer table for all voices in outdoor initiatives. And Teresa, I'm really honored to be speaking with you today and so excited to learn more about your personal and professional life. And I met you actually through a diversity, equity, and inclusion training that you led for the South Yuba River Citizens League. So I really enjoyed that time learning from you and hope to learn even more about you now.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you. Lovely. Now, I'm curious. I know that you have mentioned that you spent significant time in the outdoors in your childhood, including on your family's horse ranch and hiking in the East Bay Ranch, at the East Bay Hills. So how did those early experiences shape your connection to nature and your career trajectory as an environmental activist?
Yeah, you know, growing up, I didn't think about it. You know, I didn't think about environmental protection or anything like that. I just enjoyed being outdoors. My parents, you know, they encouraged us to stay outdoors until the streetlights came on. So we would go swimming, hiking. I was part of various after-school programs where ranches were included. And then my family had a horse ranch in the Salinas Valley. So it was just part of my makeup, being outdoors and just getting dirty and discovering new trails and just, you know, hanging out with the rest of the, folks from the neighborhood.
Definitely. Oh, beautiful. I really can relate to that, too, that, like, staying out late as long as possible while the sun's still out.
Right.
And enjoying that. How do you feel like that connected you to nature throughout your life? And how do you feel like that kind of started you on your path?
Yeah, it's always been my, you know, I tell people all the time that the redwoods are my cathedral. It's where I go to get away from the noise, the everyday noise of work and obligation. So it's just a part of who I am now. It's a part of my makeup. And even in the work that I do, I tell people to get outdoors. It's so strange to me that the work I do around the outdoors takes place indoors. Mm. That's so strange.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm always trying to encourage people, get outdoors, have your meetings outdoors. You know, it's just serenity. It's an escape from, you know, the everyday grind of, you know, responsibilities, but it shaped me in a way that I'm more aware of my surroundings, my responsibility to these outdoor spaces, conservation, if you will. And I never thought about that word. I never used that word growing up. But now I understand that I have an obligation to not only speak on it, but practice it as well.
Wow, that's such an insightful answer. Thank you so much for sharing. I that really find a lot of connection in that. And I'm curious, too, is if there's a specific kind of outdoor memory that stands out to you from your childhood.
Oh, wow. My first time going to Yosemite, it was when I was in high school. And I went with the Girls Club. never gone to Yosemite, never experienced that type of wilderness before. And I remember a ranger coming into camp and having their little, you know, talk with us, the don'ts and the do's. And I remember him vividly saying, and do not leave food out, because the bears will come into to camp. And I didn't even pay any attention to that. And then later on that night, a bear came into camp, and I was just in awe. I think I was in awe. I wasn't even scared. I was like, whoa. So I think that is what really started me on the path forward of wilderness and what it means beyond, you know, just my neighborhood.
Wow, what a cool memory that is. And yeah. I'm sure you probably never left food out again after that time, right?
No, and I've had so many instances now at Yosemite and elsewhere where bears came into camp, and it's like, oh my God, it's still a wonderment to me to see a bear.
Yes.
You know, face to face. So it's awesome.
Such majestic creatures.
Yeah,
certainly. Lovely. And I'm curious, where did you attend school, and were there any kind of like high school or college experiences that really stuck out to you and have kind of informed your time going forward?
I went to school in the Bay Area, and when I left, you know, high school, I went to school in Southern California, so I stayed committed to California into my early 20s. Just learning about the world outside of your parents' guardianship, that was a wonderment to me, because all my experiences were wrapped around what my parents allowed me to do. And then once I left, it's up to me to make the right and wrong decisions. So I think that is what has guided me, you know, to this point, understanding that I'm responsible for my actions, and even more so my inactions. So yeah.
Wow. Oh, that's, yeah, I'm just sitting with that, and would love to hear more about, were there any sort of, yeah, inactions or choices that you would have made differently, maybe in your childhood or growing up, to, you know, change how things happened, or yeah.
I don't think so, because had anything been different, I wouldn't be where I am today. So they were learning experiences. And as an adult, looking back, I can adjust what I do based on those actions. But I wouldn't change it. Yeah, because it's a part of my DNA now. It's who and why I am, especially growing up with my father in my ear telling me who I am and not to be fearful of things. So, yeah.
Wow, yes, definitely. You had those sort of your parents' beliefs. How do you feel like their beliefs kind of shaped your childhood, and do you think that did they approve of your career path, and what were their thoughts?
My father more so than my mom, because my mom, she just wanted me to be the girly girl, you know, and my dad was like, you need to get out there in the world, and no matter who you come up against, or no matter who you sit in front of, they are not better than you. Do not let titles, you know, put fear in you. So I think my father grounded me in that. I grew up knowing that there wasn't anyone that was better than me, no matter who they were. And I believe I carry that with me to this day, my father instilling that in me, and being able to speak truth to power, period.
Yes. Oh, beautiful. Thank you. I'm curious, were there any other kind of role models or influences growing up who inspired you?
Growing up in the Bay Area, it was always, you know, in the back of my mind, the legacy of the Black Panthers in Oakland. You know, I started learning about my responsibility to history early on, based on what the Panthers taught, the principles of the Black Panthers, and just understanding my history as a Black person in this country. My father made sure I understood that. So that is what drives me to this day, understanding my responsibility to history.
Wow. Beautiful. And is there a piece of advice that you've received, and has any of that advice sort of stuck with you as you've gone forward? And I think what you shared about your father, maybe that's what comes to mind.
Yeah, I learned early on that I have to walk my own path. You know, I'm responsible for how I move in this country, in this world. Mm-hmm. I'm responsible for that. Just hearing from my dad, hearing from my elementary school teacher, I'll never forget, her name was Miss Moses. And she always pushed me. And I really didn't understand it at the time. But, you know, as I grew older and looked back, I understood what she was trying to do. So moments like that are what stay with me to this day.
Wow, that's powerful. And I'm curious, what has brought you to Nevada County, and how long have you been here now, and how's the experience been for you so far?
Yeah, I moved to the county September of 2023. I had been coming to Nevada City for about 8 years for the festival. Mm-hmm. That's what first brought me here. I had a film years ago, and when I got here, I was just in awe of the beauty that's here. It's amazing. And then a couple of years back, a friend, Scott, moved here, and he would have conversations with me. Teresa, you should consider moving here. I'm like, no, Scott, no, I'm not moving there. I was just addicted to the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And then finally, you know, I thought to myself, it's time to venture beyond the Bay Area. So I moved here in September of last year, and I'm learning a lot. It's so much about this area that I wasn't aware of. And, you know, just the history that's here, you know, African American history, Native American history. And it's a wonderment to me, because why didn't I learn about these stories in the Bay Area?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's shocking what I'm uncovering, and it's amazing history, and the people have just opened up to me and are sharing some of these stories with me. So I'm looking forward to continuing that journey of discovery here.
That's so cool. I understand that feeling of addiction to the Bay Area. I went to college there and really enjoyed my experience and love Oakland, and didn't ever think I would leave. And just because of the pandemic, ended up coming back here. And this is my hometown and kind of where I grew up for most of my childhood. And it's an incredibly naturally beautiful place, but I do think there's a lot to learn here for sure. And I've been kind of uncovering some of that history as well, and it's really should be spoken about more.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that you've been encountering that as well.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and you know, so many people, like Linda Jack over at the Historical Society.
Oh.
Super helpful in helping me with some of the stories, learning from Scott the history that's here. So, yeah, a lot to learn.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Lots of learning. Well, I'd love to learn a little bit more about you and your current professional work. But before we get into that, for any listeners who don't know, I'm interviewing Teresa Baker this evening. Teresa is the founder of the In Solidarity Project and co-founder of The Outdoorist Oath. She's a lifelong lover of the outdoors who dedicates herself to engaging underrepresented communities in outdoor spaces to promote environmental protection. And Teresa, I would love to know, as the founder of the In Solidarity Project and a driving force behind initiatives like the Outdoor CEO Diversity Pledge, you've really been at the forefront of advocating for diversity and inclusion in outdoor organizations. So how do you navigate that intersectionality of race, gender, and environmentalism in your activism?
Yeah, you know, several years ago on a trip, again, to Yosemite, I would go to Yosemite monthly. I would just hop on Amtrak and go to Yosemite. But on this particular trip, I spent a week in the valley, And I did not see one other black person, period. Not in the staff, not in the visitors. And for whatever reason, that caught my attention. So when I got home, I reached out to DC and I said, hey, I think you guys have a problem. And they said, yeah, we know. Help us fix it. So that began my journey of working around matters of diversity and inclusion. And it's not a matter of trying to, you know, create enemies or have people upset with the work. It's about building a longer table so that there are more people working on environmental issues. You know, we're constantly talking about the attention around global warming and climate change. How better to address that than having more people who aren't currently at the table invited in, so you'll have more voices around these issues? And that was my initial thought around trying to be more inclusive in outdoor spaces.
Wow, definitely. It's so cool to hear about that, kind of the inception of that thought. And I'm sure that may have felt really isolating. How was that experience at first when you were first noticing that? And did it feel like you had to like find courage to take those next steps to create something, or did that feel like it was a natural like part of yourself, like something that you already had?
Yeah, I'm never afraid to speak up, period. And I think, again, that goes back to what my dad instilled in me. But by no means do I do this work alone. There are so many individuals out there that across this nation who are working on these issues, like Scott, who's here, Jose Gonzalez, founder of Latino Outdoors, Rue Mapp, founder of Outdoor Afro. There are so many of us that are doing this work, so I do not take credit for accomplishing anything on my own. It's a lot of work. It's frustrating at times because people don't want to hear that conversation. And I understand it. And then there are those who are open to the conversation and the work, but are also hesitant because they don't want to say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing and be called out by everyone over social media. Mm-hmm. So I understand every piece of this work. My job is to help people feel more comfortable in doing it, so that as a collective, we're working on these issues and we can, you know, have more people at the table so that we are not the only, you know, the yes. only face, the only person of whatever underrepresented group. So that's the hope, is that what I do can make a difference so that others are feeling a little easier at doing the work.
Wow, I really appreciate you naming those other folks who you've worked with, and definitely want to acknowledge that there are so many people doing this work, and you're a really important part of that, you know, equation, I think, and it's really awesome to see your work in action. Well, you know, given the success of the Outdoor CEO Diversity Pledge, I learned that you have over 180 brands and nonprofits who are currently signed on. So I'm curious what you think the key factor in attracting such widespread support has been for the pledge, and what impact you hope to see as the initiative continues.
Yeah, it was hard in the beginning. You know, I went to Colorado 7 years ago, to speak to brands. It was at the Outdoor Retailer Show, and that place is massive. It's three floors of everybody, you know, shoulder to shoulder, every brand imaginable. And, you know, walking the floor and sharing with people what the pledge was about, and having people push you aside and not really show any interest. But it was to be expected, you know. But slowly, people started coming around. The first brand to sign on was Marmot, out of the Bay Area, Santa Rosa area. They signed on, and then from there, it started rolling. I had a guy named Chris working with me to get Signatory signed on and to have the conversations with the different brands. And wasn't easy in the beginning, but You know, it started rolling, and not everyone gets to stay. You know, you have to, you can't point to the pledge and say, see, I care about diversity, I signed the pledge. If you're not doing the work, we kick you off. And we don't make a big deal about it. We just, you know, silently remove you and keep going and working with those brands who are actually doing the work. Brands like Brooks Running and Merrell and Patagonia in as it relates to conservation efforts.
Mm-hmm. And maybe would you be willing to share a little bit more about what the content of the pledge is?
Yeah. Yeah. The pledge is a commitment that brands make yearly. Marketing, hiring, board representation, and making sure that their ambassadors are from communities of color. Mm-hmm. The pledge was specifically for communities of color. Because I'd go online and see all these brands over, you know, social media, LinkedIn, Instagram. I would see these marketing campaigns, and I wouldn't see me in any of them. And that was frustrating. So that's what we built the pledge around. And it's a commitment to make sure that their ambassadors are diverse, that their marketing campaigns are inclusive, that the makeup of their boards and leadership is inclusive. And we work to help these brands, you know, make that happen.
That's so cool. I would love to learn more about what goes into all the behind the scenes of that and the kind of work that must be so much to manage and observe and really, really cool. I think that it's just must be an immense effort.
Jeez.
Yeah.
It is, but I think about those who came before me and the effort they had to put in to get us where we are today. And, you know, this year marks the 60th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act, as well as the Wilderness Act. So I think about that intersection and the effort that it took, you know, 60, 65 years ago to get us where we are today. And we still have to fight for those rights. So it's a lot of work, but my priority in all of it is having fun.
Yeah. Oh, very cool. What ways do you incorporate fun into your work and how do you keep levity in what you're doing, which can, as you've said, it can sometimes be frustrating and really difficult.
For me, it's getting outside. You know, I'm learning about the trails here. You know, I don't have to drive back to the Bay Area every weekend to get my hike on. I'm learning about hiking trails here.
Awesome.
You know, having friends mention places where I can go. So I'm slowly learning about that, and I'm just getting out and exploring, and that's helping me uncover a lot of the history that's here. And, you know, not flying to the East Coast every month, that helps. You know, doing a lot of Zoom calls, that helps.
Mm-hmm.
So just making sure that fun is my priority and saying no to stuff.
Mm.
I think we get so caught up in saying yes to everything that we have put all this pressure on ourselves because we want to be yes people all the time. I practice no, and that's helpful.
Wow, no is so powerful. I really struggle with saying yes too much, I think.
Yeah.
So I really admire those folks who are good at saying no.
Yeah.
I would love to hear more, Teresa, about your organizing efforts and how you have created these things. Is there a specific project right now that you've been working on that you're particularly proud of? And could you share a little bit more about how it's impacted the communities that you've hoped it would serve?
Yeah, as an extension of the In Solidarity Project, recently, after a meeting at the Patagonia headquarters in California, a guy named Owen, who's with Moose Jaw, suggested we start an alliance, an outdoor alliance. So we've been working on that, and today was actually our first member virtual meeting.
We have
our first in-person meeting next month in Portland at Keene headquarters. But it's an opportunity, again, for brands to come together outdoor organizations to come together to talk about what they can do as a collective. Because all too often, these brands, these multi-million, billion-dollar brands, are scared to step out on their own. And that is so shocking and surprising to me, but I get it. But the alliance is built around the concept of everybody coming together and doing the work as a collective, learning from one another, sharing what's worked and what hasn't worked. And I think that's an amazing approach for these brands to do, to share what their company is doing with other companies, because a lot of times we like to keep it to ourselves. We want to be secret. You know, we want to have secrets about what our company is doing. But the fact that they're stepping up and doing this work as a collective through Outdoor Diversity Alliance, it's awesome to see.
That is so cool. Yeah, that transparency and bringing everything to light. I think there's so much shame around doing this work. Sometimes, as you were saying, right, people were fearful to be canceled or say the wrong thing.
Right.
And how do you, what's kind of the way that you empower brands to be more transparent? And is there any kind of recommendation that you give to folks to take on that, like, courage and be more open and transparent? Yeah.
Yeah, I think making sure leadership is involved. You know, often when we have meetings, they want to send their marketing department. But I think it's vital that leadership is involved in these conversations so that staff can hear directly from leadership their support. And it's important that staff can hear that so they feel like they have the power to express themselves freely without backlash from their company. So having leadership, HR specifically, involved in these conversations early on is vital so that you get buy-in from the rest of the staff.
Definitely. Yeah, those decision makers have to be at the table too for the action to happen.
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, I know that you have such extensive experience in grassroots organizing and collaborating with these different outdoor agencies and orgs, and I'm curious, what strategies do you find most effective in bridging that gap between community activism and institutional change? I know that's kind of a big question, but...
Yeah, I think just making brands aware that the racial demographic shift that's taking place in this country will affect them at some point. And getting them to see and understand that is vital in this work.
As
long as they can see their bottom line is tied to making sure they are more inclusive, that's the buy-in for them. You have to make them see why it's important for their bottom line.
Definitely. Oh, wow. Well, thank you so much. And Teresa, and our last question, I wish we had longer to chat, but I'm curious if you had sort of a magic wand to wave and improve our society, what would you do and kind of what problem would you solve?
Love on one another, love on nature, support one another as best we can. And that's it. I mean, I think all too often we try to make it about us. I tell people all the time that change ain't about me. It's about those who will come after and what we put in place today. So I live in obligation. I live in debt to those who came before me and in obligation to those who will come after. And that's what I try to get across to people.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much, Teresa. That's really powerful. I so appreciate that. And I'm so honored that you've been my guest today. Thank you so much, Teresa Baker. And before we log off, want to tell everyone a little bit about you. And that's almost it for our show tonight, folks. Teresa Baker is our wonderful guest this evening on The Sages Among Us. She is the founder of the In Solidarity Project and co-founder of the Outdoorist Oath. She's a lifelong lover of the outdoors who dedicates herself to engaging underrepresented communities in outdoor spaces to promote environmental protection. Through her work with outdoor agencies, organizations, and speaking engagements nationwide, she strives to foster diversity and inclusivity, believing in building a longer table for all voices in outdoor initiatives. Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you.